Hello, I'm Kyle.
And I am Ryan.
And when our powers combine, we form
Experience Grind Podcast.
The podcast where, for better or worse, good or bad, we grind out every experience presented to us and give you our honest opinions on those experiences. That's our podcast. That's our motto. That's our show goal. It's what we strive to bring to you, you loyal listeners, yeah. All 7.5 of you.
I think our goal is to give you a weekly dose of awesome for movies and games. Whatever.
Thank you for not saying awesome sauce.
Why would I say awesome sauce?
It's this thing that has popped up in current year. I don't get, like, people say awesome sauce and it drives me fucking mad, man. Have you not heard it?
I feel like awesome sauce was used like 5 or 6 years ago. Like, I don't think it's a new thing.
It's not new, but it's coming in. I think what it is nerdy white girls got a hold of it. And so now it's everywhere. And amazeballs. Fucking drive me nuts.
Amazeballs is definitely a Tina Fey 30 Rock thing from 10 years ago.
Yeah,
there's no way.
But now it's everywhere. I see it everywhere. And especially dumb white chicks.
Oh
my God, it's terrible. Worst thing ever.
This week, alienating another group of audience members, dumb white chicks. We don't want you.
Do we have dumb white chicks that listen to a movie and video game based podcast?
I mean, if they're dumb, they're going to listen, right?
Yeah.
That was our market. We're dumb people.
With dumb people. That's
and now we just alienated the dumb white chicks.
Hey, if you listen, dumb white chicks, we'll give out free pumpkin spice lattes. I got them back. I just hooked them back in. That's right. You girls are here. Hit up sound engineer Andrew for those free Starbucks. He's on Twitter at sound engineer Andy. He'll give you those.
I've got nothing.
Yeah, I don't know.
So I don't know where this improv is going.
You made up these nice guidelines to follow, and I've immediately taken us off rails. And I love it. I love it, I gotta say.
It's literally within 30 seconds, you completely
just
tangented.
Derailed it.
Yeah.
Just, that's my specialty, brah.
That's A-okay.
That's what I bring to it. So let's talk about what this episode is about.
What is it about?
Well, I believe this is my absolute all-time number one favorite video game.
It is.
This is the reason we started this podcast, was to get to these, I feel.
Oh, really?
I feel, you know, movies.
So the past 16 weeks were all just a lead up to you talking about this game, which I'm going to intentionally not name since you're building up the dramatic tension I see.
No, I don't. I guess I phrased it wrong. We've been leading to this point. I mean, it is a countdown up to this point. I'm not saying it. This was the entire basis. I've had fun doing everything up to this point.
Gotcha.
But I think everything's been leading to this game and your number one game.
This is the conclusion
of our first.
And then we're done.
Nah, yeah. We're done. We're out of here. We've achieved the goals that we set out with this podcast, and that is to A, get free stuff.
Yes.
Which has happened.
Mm-hmm.
And B, have an excuse when our significant others complain to us about the video games we're playing. We just, babe, I'm sorry. It's for the podcast. I got to do it. It's work.
It is.
I don't want to be doing it. No, it's awful. But I got to do it because there's people counting on me. You know?
Sometimes we really feel that way, though. Sometimes
it is a grind, hence the name of this fantastically named show. Pat myself on the back there. So, this episode is about my number one game, favorite of all time, the Squaresoft classic, Final Fantasy VII, or 7 to the layman.
Final Fantasy VII. Yes. Not Square Enix, Squaresoft.
No, it was back when we were Squaresoft, baby, not before we got bought out by Squeenix.
Mm-hmm.
It's pop. Common nomenclature. I didn't know what to say there. I blame Andre. Okay. California Champagne.
Just thought I witnessed a little stroke happening. Pop 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 pop.
Pop pop gets a treat. No, pop pop gets a stroke. That's what happened there. I'm stroking out everybody.
Oh, that's another thing you can expect from our podcast. Dark turns really quickly.
Boy, yeah. Especially the drunker we are, the darker they turn, and the faster they come. No, it's good, because you take us really dark more than I do.
I do.
I feel, so.
Any chance I can get death worked in as a joke?
Not only death, man. You go to rape really quick, and I question it sometimes. I don't know, is he subconsciously going here? What's going on? I don't get it, but hey, you're my buddy. I'm not going to.
I had this uncle when I was younger.
So let's talk about this intro question / topic. Let's try to get this ball rolling here. Because it's good, but you have this thing typed up. And I want to follow it. I want to try to stay somewhat of a semblance of a thing. So,
all right.
You created this one this week.
I
so
did,
I'll let you present it.
In honor of Final Fantasy VII, your favorite game of all time. And I think a series we both kind of admire and appreciate, you know, to differing effects. Like, each one, you know, there's good and
Everybody's got a favorite.
There's good and bad.
But when a series spans such a long time, that's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, we get 15 this
very
year,
soon.
And that's...
That's what they say.
And there's more than 15.
15 has been in development also for, like, 6 years, if not longer.
It's been a long time coming.
I'm very, very excited, team.
But
I will say that.
Series that's been around for over 30 years. I mean, there's a lot of characters and
started
a lot of stories.
Started on the original NES, the Nintendo Entertainment System, Final Fantasy. Started there.
What, 91?
No, it was before
was
that.
It
was in the 80s, I'm pretty sure.
It had to have been if it was NES, you're right, yeah. So, anyway... Long, long, long cast of characters. Kyle, I want to know, well, who are some of your favorite characters from the Final Fantasy series? And then some of your least favorites.
Well, it is my favorite. I got, you know, some of my favorite characters of all time. Cloud is definitely up there. Cloud Strife, main character of 7. I was initially drawn to him as a kid. I'd never even played 7. I got an EGM, and Cloud was on the cover. He had the sword on the back and the hand on it. But that massive fucking Buster sword immediately caught my attention. And I thought it was just the cool... I was like, I've never seen a sword like that. That was so fucking cool. And of course, you know, being the angsty kid as I was growing up, teenager, you know, I liked Cloud because he's a bit of an angsty fellow. But also, you know, I think his angst is a little oversold. Cloud's also a pretty silly guy, especially in 7.
He does a lot of silly things.
Yeah.
Which I forgot about till this most recent playing.
Yeah.
And
there's a lot of it in there.
Yeah.
I'm also a fan of the female Cloud.
Lightning.
I really liked Lightning. And I'm one of the very few people that actually really enjoyed Final Fantasy 13. I played the absolute shit.
You are one of the few people.
I know, and I'm fine with that. I think I've told you before and on this podcast, I'm still one trophy away from platinuming in that game.
Blows my mind.
I've put so much time into that game. Now, story-wise, it's pretty garbage.
Yeah.
If you ask me, I cannot tell you really what that game's about other than...
No. It's a convoluted mess.
Very convoluted. Which I think that's my one worry about 15, maybe. Because, you know, I'm a huge fan of the Kingdom Hearts series, but man, those games are also just, what in the fuck? You ask anybody, I tell you what's happening in Kingdom Hearts, and if they tell you, they're lying.
I think the first Kingdom Hearts was pretty easy to understand, because it was simple. But then the second, where you introduce the new characters and a new faction of players, and it just...
And then there's been like 4 or 5 side quest
games
are all canon that I've tried to play, and I just can't do it.
The game that sums up Kingdom Hearts and why I don't like it, and I love the main games, but there's one called Kingdom Hearts 358 over 2 days.
Yeah. Yeah.
The fuck?
Who knows?
Like, what
Who
does knows? That even mean?
I don't know, man.
What a horrible Japanese to English translation. Like,
I don't think that's Jap to English. I think it's called that in Japanese, too.
It's horrible.
It's just really weird.
That title alone makes me not want any part of the side quest stuff.
I've tried to play that game, and no, it's not good.
Is it? It's the DS one, right? It's like just a rehash of the first one, with just like, it's the same environments you've been in, but they do a new twist to the story.
See, I think 358 over 2 days, I thought that was a retelling of the original Game Boy Advance one.
Chain of Memories, like the card game?
Yeah, exactly. I think it's that.
Without
the card stuff. And I've tried to play that game, can't get into it.
I've not played any of
them. I've tried to play the 3DS one, Dream Drop Distance.
Yeah.
I got pretty far, and then it just... What? I don't know, man. It's...
I just refuse. I refuse. And it's a lot like Final Fantasy VII, which we'll talk about later, but Final Fantasy VII also has several spinoffs, like Crisis Core and...
Yep.
Advent Children, the movie. Then there's the one with Vincent, the Dirge of Cerberus.
Dirge of Cerberus. Yep.
I just have no interest in going into these side things.
I got very into all those. But
did you?
We can talk about that when we get into it.
I think we will. So Cloud and Lightning are your favorites.
Cloud and Lightning.
Huh?
I'm also a big fan. I've always liked Red 13, again from this one.
Huh. Okay.
And of course, fucking Sephiroth. I think Sephiroth is one of the greatest villains ever. Big fanboy. I wear it on the sleeve.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't care.
Okay.
Obviously, you know, this is the one that I've been exposed to the most, so I like this one a lot. I also really like Squall from Final Fantasy VIII.
Okay, sure. Yeah. I thought he was kind of bland toast.
Again, yeah.
He was much more of a cipher. Like, he was the audience surrogate. Like, you can kind of almost put yourself in his position because he is so bland and, I think, personality-less. Like, he didn't leave much of an impact on me.
What's crazy is that out of everybody in 8, like they're all so bland outside of Squall.
Yeah.
And I feel Cypher. Both those two have the, like, I don't know the motivations of any other character in 8.
I couldn't tell you anything about 8, except I remember really liking Quistis.
Really? Yeah, Quistis is okay.
And I thought that was interesting, some of her stuff, if I remember. But, Final Fantasy 8 is such a fucking fog to me. Like, I can't remember anything about it.
8's one of the ones that I replayed the most recent, actually.
Oh, yeah?
It was like 3 years ago, I think. I like 8. 8's fun because it's also, I think, one of the easiest to just absolutely break. And that's, you know, all Final Fantasies, they can so easily just be broken to where you become a literal god almost. That I guess the only other one I really like, I've always really liked Waka from Final Fantasy X.
Yeah, voiced by Joe DiMaggio, Bender, and
he's also Jake.
From Adventure Time.
From my shirt that I'm wearing.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And he's also Marcus Fenix from the Gears of War saga.
That's right. That's right, yeah.
Great voice actor. I've always liked
Waka,
though, man.
Yeah. Just any time that man speaks, I love it.
Yeah. So those would be my favorites. Okay. So let me ask you, what are your favorites? I kind of went off there.
No, that's okay. I was expecting to have several. I wasn't expecting like 4 out of the 5 of them to be from Final Fantasy VII.
I mean,
it is your favorite.
It is my favorite. I mean, so, come on.
I'm surprised you didn't pick one of my favorites, which is also from Final Fantasy VII, which is Cid.
Cid is very close.
I love Cid.
This is my favorite incarceration of Cid because Cid is in every Final Fantasy. That's kind of their thing too. I think he's not in one of them, and I can't
incarnation?
What did I say?
Incarceration.
Did I? Yeah, well, he is a prisoner, too. He's a prisoner and slave to this series.
That was good.
Yeah.
That was brilliant.
But no, yeah.
This is why you get paid in free stuff, because of your quick wordsmithing.
He is the best Cid. I will give you that.
Yeah. I love his story, which we'll talk about more.
And this Cid takes the place. He's the dragoon character, because he has the spear and he has jump, and that's his role in this.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I like this Cid.
He was just foul-mouthed, wisecracking, and like when I played this game, I was 12 or 13, I don't remember, but that spoke to me at that age.
Yeah.
Like I was like, I like this character.
Here's one thing that I noticed that I like to point out to people, and we'll get more, you know, before Cid shows up, Barret is that character. Barret is constantly cursing all over the place. But as soon as Cid shows up,
he steals the show. And then
Barret changes. Like he doesn't curse, he becomes a lot more fatherly almost. It's really weird how that happens, because then Cid takes over that role. He's very cursy, he's very foul and brash.
I think that could come into play because of maybe some of the plot elements
that
happen.
I think once he discovers Dine and he grows as a character.
Yeah.
But I think it's cool. I've always liked that.
Mm-hmm.
And most people don't pick up on that.
Yeah, that's a good catch. I also really like, you said you're one of the few people that really loves Final Fantasy 13. I'm one of the few people that loves Final Fantasy 12.
I knew you were going to
love 12. I love 12.
You and my buddy Jason fucking love 12.
I think it's a fantastic...
I can't get into it, man. I tried.
It's more Western than Japanese.
Well, I should love it because I love the Ivalice universe, and that one takes place in the
Final Fantasy
universe.
Tactics universe. Yeah,
and because I love Tactics, I love Tactics Advance. Both those were great games. What is it, the Gambit system?
Yeah, which I love, and we'll talk more about the systems later on. But I love the Gambit system, and I love the grid in which you level up. I really like it. But my two favorite characters from there, because they're a pair, are Balthier and Pinello. Is it Pinello? I don't remember how you say her
name. She's the rabbit-esque character.
Yes,
right?
Yeah.
I think Balthier was originally supposed to be the main character of the story.
Ooh.
And then at the 11th hour, Square made them add Van. Is that the main character that you play as?
That's probably a good idea. Because by relegating those two to the sidelines, you essentially make like a Han Solo and Chewie type of dynamic.
But, the story is more about them, isn't it? A lot about their quest, right?
Yeah, Van is like the reluctant hero who gets swept up into their quest,
and
we see this big war
through his eyes.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
but yeah, I think Balthier was supposed to be the main character. So
that makes complete sense.
It's cool that you identify with, and he's your favorite. I liked Balthier and I liked Pinello a lot. I didn't get super far into it. I think I got like 10, 15 hours in, which amazingly by Final Fantasy standards,
it's not very far into it. Yeah, it's story. I would argue the story is a lot like how you said 13 is. I think the story is kind of a messy story.
And it
never hooked me. It was the gameplay that kept me coming back.
The developer or the director got fired, I think, halfway through.
Yeah.
No, he did not. He had a mental breakdown. That's right. And left. And then they had to scramble to finish it, which is never going to be good. Yeah. The thing I also remember...
Makes for a messy product.
12 is that 12, it has this one aspect that if I was 12 years old and designed an RPG, I would do this. Whereas, like, I think one of the very first chests in the game has, like, the ultimate weapon. And to not get it, you have to not open these four random chests in the map. Did you... You don't know about this?
No, yeah. I didn't hear about that.
Yeah, it's weird. It's how you get that ultimate weapon. And it's in, like, one of the very first chests in, like, the main city. But if you open it, you get, like, 12 potions. But if you wait...
Yeah.
And also don't open these four other chests, then the ultimate weapon for Vaughn is in there or some shit.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
I beat the game just fine without it. I'm okay.
I guess you can. Didn't do it, a lot of people don't get it.
Huh. That's interesting.
It's very similar to the way, I guess, to get the ultimate weapon in Final Fantasy IX is near impossible. Because you have to beat the game in under a certain amount of time. But with all the cutscenes, it makes that impossible. Unless, like, what you had to do was, when a cutscene started, was open your PlayStation and then shut it so that it would skip the cutscene.
Huh.
It's so weird and archaic that, like... And it makes it almost, it's near impossible to get on, like, ports because you can't do that. You can't just open the lid and skip through that shit, so.
Well, that's kind of disheartening.
Yeah, it's really weird, man.
I'll tell you right now, I've not played Final Fantasy IX. I never played it. I watched my friend play parts of it, so I have it on PSN. I won't be able to do that then if I ever play through it.
Nine's probably, everybody loves Nine, but because Nine's like the old school.
It's the high fantasy.
Letter.
It's the return to form.
Which 7 and 8 took it in the sci-fi Blade Runner
steampunky
style.
Steampunky, kind of.
Yeah, 7 is definitely steampunky.
Yeah. Yeah.
8's more just futuristically, I think. I don't know.
I've got more to say on that later.
Yeah.
So put a pin in it. Cha-ching!
I am.
That's
so
money sound. That's not a pin sound.
Other favorite characters?
Auron. From Final Fantasy X.
Yeah, a lot of people like Auron.
I kind of love Auron in the same way that I think you say, like, Cloud Strife.
Yeah.
Because I think they're very similar. Like, they're both kind of silent badasses.
Yeah.
Essentially. But whereas, like, Cloud has his goofier moments, Auron never does.
No,
he is strictly business. But I kind of dig it. He's kind of like Yojimbo. He's like a loner. He's like a Western. He's like Clint Eastwood. He's like a Western hero. There's something really fun about him juxtaposed to, like, weird cat people and Lulu and her black goth get up and everything.
Yeah.
Like, it's just really interesting.
I like that we both pick characters from Final Fantasy X.
Yeah.
That's
well,
cool.
I love Final Fantasy X. That one might be my favorite game.
Really? See, I like X a lot, but it grates on me.
The only thing that grates on me from Final Fantasy X is the aesthetic. I really hate the way everybody dresses in that universe, and I think it's absurd and stupid. Like, if you look at Titus or Titus's clothes, it gives me like a hernia.
Yeah, I can see that.
It makes me so angry.
I don't like the battle system. The battle system.
Love it.
The only thing I don't like is that every fight you got to use all fucking 7 characters if you want people to progress right, and you need them. You know, they each play an archetype.
So you jump somebody in at the very last moment to get a hit in.
Battles just take forever. Whereas, you know, with, like, 7, you pick the ones you like. And even if you want to switch them out, boom, you just trade their materia. Cool.
Yeah.
So that's my one big complaint. It wears thin on me because as I'm playing it, you're constantly battle, you know.
You can switch out the materia, but they still don't level up the same way. Like, you can still, you have, like, Cloud at, like, level 57 because you're using him. But, like, the other people you don't use, like, they're in the mid-40s then. So you'd still have to level them up.
Yeah.
The materia switches, but, like, still need their HP and stuff to go
up. So, yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, I think there's still some of that in Final Fantasy VII.
But, I mean, again, with 7, you don't have to do that. You can pick the 3 that you like and just run them the whole game.
You can't. There's some moments where you're forced to use different people.
Exactly, yeah. But,
and that's frustrating, especially at the end where they get rid of Cloud and Tifa, and you're like, well, fuck, those are, like, usually my mains.
And split up into the 6-mans.
Yeah.
The 2 3-man teams. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know what you're saying. I get you. So, you said favorite, and then you said least favorites, right?
Yeah, so least favorites, yeah.
I'm probably going to lose a lot of fans with this.
Oh, I am so interested.
I have never liked Kefka
from
Final Fantasy VI.
Yeah.
I've
never played VI. I know all about Kefka, the clown prince.
Yeah.
And his turn, and I think it's an interesting thing, but I've not seen it, so I don't know.
Growing up after playing 7, you know, everybody else I knew also loved 6, and that's all they talked about, so...
Especially if they played it before 7.
Yeah, which I did not. 7 was my first introduction to this entire universe, and that's a story I'll get into in a bit, too. But yeah, I never liked Kefka. I didn't like most of the cast of 8. I think Zell's really, really dumb.
Oh.
With his Mike Tyson face tattoo. But Zell is also... he's the easiest character to break the game with, because you can do the limit break trick with him, and I beat that whole game with Zell, even though he's the worst. I never liked Kamari from 10. Kamari, I feel, is kind of a useless character. Even his level,
yeah.
Even on the sphere, yeah. Grid, like his way to level up is really short, and then you got to immediately pick somewhere to send him.
I don't think he was very interesting either.
Nah,
thematically,
pretty...
like, I don't think he added much to the game. It was just like, you have a bunch of people, so here's a blue cat.
Yeah, here's
person.
A giant cat guy.
Yeah.
Who, and he's the Dragoon character, too. But
yeah, he is. Not nearly as good as Cid.
I never liked...
Or I guess Cecil is the one that everybody talks about liking. Wasn't he, like, the original in Final Fantasy IV? Wasn't he the Dragoon
who
started it?
It's Cecil and Edge? No, Edge is 6. I don't know. Yeah, yeah, Cecil... I thought Cecil was the Dragon Knight, who is the Dragoon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
I never liked Saz from 13. He's the black guy with the afro and the chocobo
baby. Chocobo in it. Oh, he's... Okay. So, I'm going to cut in.
Yeah,
because
ahead.
He's not anywhere near as offensive as Vanille. Vanille is the fucking worst.
You think?
I find her grating. I hate every line of dialogue she says. Whoever thought it was a good idea to do this voice the entire game. I'm in here. It's fucking obnoxious. And it's embarrassing as like an adult male playing a game. Maybe not in Japan, but I fucking hated her. I thought it was a dumb inclusion.
Yeah.
I liked her sister, though. I can't remember her name.
Oh, that was...
Fang, yeah.
I liked Fang because Fang's like the strongest in the game, and she's got that cool Australian accent.
Yeah.
I just butchered an Australian accent for the listeners.
Oh, I didn't even know you tried.
Yeah, really bad. Really bad. Sometimes I hit him. Most of the time, I don't. But that's really all I can think of. My exposure to, you know, the entire series really starts at 7 and focuses from 7 on.
Oh, me too. Yeah. I think I played Final Fantasy 3 on the NDS, but that was like it. And then it's 7 and on for me too. I've not played 9. I can tell you right now, one of the worst designed characters is Kina. Quina.
Is that the little summoner girl?
I don't know. She's like the chef. Like the cook.
Oh, yeah. She's like, awful. She's like a frog or something.
What the fuck were they thinking with that design?
I don't know, man. It's the same thing with like Kate Sith and 7. I don't...
Ketchy? I don't know how you pronounce it, but...
I've always said Kate.
That's the English. That's a dumb English way.
The English fight.
But, man... I still take that because at least like that's kind of interesting. Like, why is this cat riding a big, dumb...
I mean,
an elephant pillow.
Yeah, I like that it gives the explanation for it later. That yeah, I get exactly what you're saying with that. That's such
Kina,
a...
and I think her not. It's I don't know if they have limit breaks in 9, but doesn't she eat people right to absorb the
because,
power?
Yeah, because she's the blue magic character, the blue magic character is the enemy power.
Oh, okay.
Which is also what Kamari is in 10. So.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, I hate her.
Yeah, she's awful.
I think it's
totally.
And Steiner with the big mascara and Zidane and his stupid tail. I really don't like a lot of the designs in 9.
I don't either, man.
I like Vivi, like the black mage.
Everybody
as
likes
typical
Vivi.
Black mage.
Vivi's okay. He's the least bad in 9.
Yeah.
I will say.
Freya's
kind of cool, but she's also a mouse or
something.
Yeah,
it's like, I don't know why. It's like, you have a good idea there, and then you went too far.
Are these furries? What is happening? Am I wolfkin?
This is what Jupiter Ascending was based off of. The Wachowskis were playing fucking Final Fantasy IX, and they were like, let's make Channing Tatum a wolf boy, and...
I never saw
Sean Bean will be a B-man.
I'm not going to see it.
I think you should because it's so bad.
Maybe we'll
it
do.
Needs to be seen.
Maybe we'll do a drunk cast on it. That'd
I think
be
that
fun.
That's actually a good idea.
That would
that's
be
a
good.
Really good idea. Put that in the books. Okay, so yeah, those
that's
I think
our,
are the...
Yeah. So you want to get into our sponsorship here?
Yeah, I can, but I think you have the better story. I think you have the story to tell.
About our sponsor?
Yeah. I mean, we could just go straight into the sponsor, but you wanna talk about like the nice little gift they sent?
Well, yeah. So our sponsor, unofficial
sponsor,
as always, is the wonderful Andre California Champagne.
# unofficial as fuck.
Yes, unofficial as fuck. This week we are drinking the Pink Moscato variation of their wonderful champagne. And
I'll actually pour a glass right now.
The wonderful people at Andre have enjoyed what we've done here with the podcast, Ryan. You know, it didn't start out serious. You know, we kind of always joke that they got us through the episodes. They helped loosen the tongues. And then the people at Andre actually really responded when I tweeted at them And they really liked what we've done here and sent us some free stuff.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is the champagne glasses that we're drinking out of now. Let's go ahead and get that a clink. Thank you, Andre.
Audio.
They also sent us some pens and then these window clings, which I'm kind of not so into.
Are those the cheetah the holding cheetah. The...
I don't get what that is.
I don't know. A separated cheetah head grabbing a glass or a bottle of Andre. And it's not the best Photoshop. Like, it's almost like an internet meme or something.
It seems like that. Like they're going meme-y or just random. Maybe that leopard / cheetah is just epic as fuck. Epic as fuck.
I mean, I guess so, right?
I mean, it could be. I mean,
what's more epic than a cheetah drinking Andre?
It's not going to bite you. It's going to pour you a glass of Andre. That's kind of cool.
I like this better. Butler cheetah.
Ooh, okay.
Wine butler cheater.
You taking notes,
cheater.
Andre?
Wine butler cheater.
Wine butler cheater from Andre. So thank you guys to Andre California yes. Champagne. I don't know if we can tell you to, but if you're going to drink champagne, drink Andre.
Yeah.
And keep 2016 # epic with Andre. That's what we got to say.
Perfect.
Thank you, guys.
And again, good job, Kyle. Good job at running that Twitter.
I would say, you know, if I was going to attempt eco-terrorism,
uh-oh,
I would do it with Andre California Champagne. That ties into Final Fantasy VII.
What?
Yeah. What? Avalanche is an eco-terrorist group.
No, I get that. Like, I don't understand the... How are you going to be an eco-terrorist with Andre?
Because I'll get drunk and blow up like a Hummer dealership. I don't know, dude.
So you'll make bad decisions.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so yeah. You'll get drunk, make bad decisions, like not playing Final Fantasy VII, or...
or attempting eco-terrorism.
The leap to eco-terrorism was
To tie it into Final Fantasy VII. That's all I was trying to do.
This Andre is giving me a boner. This boner is going to make an avalanche. Avalanche is in Final Fantasy VII.
That's a worse jump than what I made. What the hell?
It sounded so much better in my head when I was formulating
I'm going to snort an avalanche of cocaine because it's snow. Oh, my God. So that's our sponsorship. It was sponsored also by Mako Reactors, provided by the lovely Shinra Corporation.
There you go.
Shinra Corporation's keeping your lights on, folks. With the power of the planet.
What's the name of the casino that Kate Shee runs?
Oh, that
the
is
Golden Saucer.
Golden Saucer, yeah.
I hear at the Golden Saucer, the only thing they serve is Andre Champagne.
Well, of course. That's all you're going to get at the Golden Saucer.
Right.
If you're going to watch Chocobo Races, you're going to have a glass of Andre California Champagne in your hands. That's all I'm saying.
I also have it on good authority. Don Corneo only lets his girls have Andre Champagne.
He probably Bill Cosby's that, though.
Oh, absolutely.
A little bit. Slips a little roof and all.
So many roofies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because Don Cornero is a giant rapist perv.
Absolutely.
Hey, I went to rape first. We're really getting into this episode. We're jumbling around. We got a special new thing we're going to try here. We're going to give a sample of the intro music for Final Fantasy VII and let you guys enjoy that. It's about a minute.
It's what the pro podcasts call bumpers.
Yeah. So here we go. Here's our bumper.
And then we'll be back with our review.
That is the very first thing you hear when you start this game, right?
Oh, I don't know.
What we just listened to? Yeah, it's when you start a new game.
Oh, the new game. Yes. Yeah, that's what Not comes like in. At the title screen. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's the intro FMV that starts with the life force, and then it shows... Now here, are we going to say Aerith or Aerith? Because
Aerith.
Yeah, because that is
I'll
her
say Aerith.
Official name.
Yeah, so for those who don't know, in English, it's... Her name is Eris.
They translated it in 7 to Eris, but as every other...
Yeah.
Every time she shows up, like in Kingdom Hearts and everything, it's Aerith.
Well, that's because in Japanese, it's Aerith, and then they had to name it... I forget how it's why. It has something to do with the Japanese would call her Erisu, if it was A-E-R-I-S in Japanese, so they put the T-H there to make them not do the U at the end.
Ah.
So it's just Aerith, and it can cut off, because they had a problem with saying Eris and then cutting it off.
I did not know this.
That is why.
That's cool.
Yes.
That's
something I learned.
Always thought that they made a mistranslation, so.
Nope, it has to do with how the S's come out.
So before we get into the meat and potatoes of this.
Meats and potatoes.
We're going to try a fun new thing also. You know, as the podcast, we always try to, we always like to grow and get better. Try new things, see what works, see what doesn't. Burping on the mic obviously works.
Also segues we need to work on.
Yeah, we'll get there. But for this one, you and I are both going to try to give a brief 2-minute rundown of what the fuck this game is about.
Yes.
And you're going to go first, and then I'm going to make mine so much better than yours.
Oh my god, so you're putting me in the spot first.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so this is going to be bad.
Here's the only reason. You've played this more recently than me. I played this last year, and I did not play it for this podcast because I have played this game more than anything else ever in my life. Probably double what I've played any other game. So
the goal here is to just give a basic 2-minute synopsis for people who don't know. So I'm not going to be telling the whole story. And I don't even think I could.
No, not in 2 minutes. Good luck.
Final Fantasy VII is so dense.
It's on 3 discs.
Yeah.
It's huge. All right,
2 minutes. Do we have a shot clock?
I can start one. Here we go.
Give me a shot clock. I'm going to explain this whole game in 2 minutes.
Keep talking. Keep rambling.
All right.
All right.
Final Fantasy VII is the story, and there's going to be spoilers here, of the ancients, the Cetra, a group of ancients who lived on Earth, and they were using the Gaia, the life force of the Earth, and then a meteor carrying Genova, who is this bad, ill-intent creature, came down and wanted to use Gaia, the life force, for bad. So the ancients created weapons to fight, but they didn't need to fight. I don't remember what happened. Genova went away or something, or maybe was defeated. I don't remember. This was a long time ago. Present day, shit. Good lord, this is a convoluted fucking story.
Yeah.
Present day, Cloud Strife is a man who is part of Soldier who is going up against a Mako reactor housed by Shinra. Shinra, oh my god, it's 50 seconds. Shinra. Shinra is a bad corporation. This world also is like Elysium. Like, all the rich people live on top and the poor people are on bottom. So they have these plates where the rich people live and the poor people are below them. And Cloud's fighting for the poor people, who is, I can't fucking remember, Avalanche. Avalanche are the freedom fighters of the poor people, and they're going against, oh my god, this is so crazy. They're going against Shinra and stopping these Mako reactors because the Mako is draining the Gaia, the life force of the planet, and they want to save the planet. They do.
And ta-da!
Sephiroth, oh my god, I didn't even get into Sephiroth, and then Vincent's whole stuff, oh my gosh. The thing is, it goes by really quick, but then it's also taking fucking forever, too. This is horrible.
Hey, man.
Sephiroth is the reincarnated... You know, I mean, that's a spoiler, so I'm not going to say that. Sephiroth is Genova's... Sephiroth is Genova. That's a spoiler. I don't know what I'm doing here.
10 seconds.
Let's just call it. I can't. I call it 150 seconds. I...
All right, here we go.
Jesus.
So this is my attempt at it, okay?
Please, yeah.
2 minutes? Here we go.
2 minutes.
Final Fantasy VII is the story of class warfare, the rich and the poor battle for the first half of the game. Then you find out that the story goes much deeper, and it's a struggle for the entire soul and life force of the planet. You take on the role of Cloud Strife, who leads his ragtag group of misfits through the first half of the story before you discover that Sephiroth, who you thought had been killed, is actually still alive, but is a clone and has been growing his power in the North Crater at the top of the world, draining the life force and becoming omnipotent or godlike. And you must stop him before he summons a new meteor to crack the planet and make the planet try to attempt to heal itself with its life force so that he can take all of that and become a super godlike character. This entire thing plays out over 3 discs. You will travel the world from tropical Bahamas to, icy cold mountains and everywhere in between, and you'll have some laughs along the way, and maybe a little bit of cloud strife, because there will be challenges along the way, and people will try to stop you.
Damn you. You're doing so good. But at the end, killing it.
At the end of the day, if you assemble your team right, grow your materia correctly, and maybe get that all-powerful Knights of the Round, you will come out victorious and stop Sephiroth. Boom. 132. And I even kind of embellished a little bit to make it go longer.
I know.
Again, dude, I love this game.
How the hell did you summarize all that?
I love this game. I haven't played it. I think last year was when I did it. I bought it on Steam.
Yeah. Okay. That's pretty good.
I
think we should also say, for people who don't know, this is a role-playing game.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Which is something RPG to know. Yeah.
It's a turn-based. Mm-hmm. With the ATB.
And really, one of the first big cinematic 3D ones. I think the first. I don't think there was a game before this that was 3D RPG. Was there? I mean, Quest 64, maybe.
There were some that tried, but none on the scale, none with the name recognition that a Final Fantasy brings. I remember the marketing for this game.
Yeah.
They just would show a picture of Midgar, and it would say, the reaction you're having is the same as a deer in headlights. Because I mean, at the time, especially for those FMVs, it's pretty mind-blowing from what we had come from, which was the Sega Genesis and SNES era.
Mm-hmm.
What they don't show you in those marketing clips is what the game looks like when you're walking around. Because it's bad.
It's rough. I actually don't think it's bad.
It has not aged well.
I don't know.
They do a good job. You get what is supposed to be happening.
Mm-hmm.
For somehow showing these incredibly polygon characters, you can get a range of emotion from them, what's happening.
I think, arguably, sprites age better than the 3D polygons of the PlayStation era, but I would argue, I think you do get more emotion from these crude polygons
than
the sprites.
Do you think that 7 looks better now than 8?
Yes.
I do too.
Yeah.
Because 8 becomes a muddy, jumbly mess.
Yeah, I think things that work best from, like, or any kind of 3D, what is going to age best is simple.
Yes.
Simplify your graphics. Do not try to be realistic, and then you will have a game that looks good for 20, 30 years. As opposed to, like, Gears of War, which is, like, super realistic, very focused on looks and realism and lighting and whatever. Like, in 10, 15 years, that game's not going to look good.
No, you're going
to
be
But
like,
you
could
go
what?
Back to Okami, which is a game that came out, like, years before.
It's very stylized.
Cel-shaded, very stylized. That game's going to look pretty forever. Like, it's not going to age.
Yeah, but Okami is, like, I wouldn't compare Okami to 7.
Because there's, like, Wind Waker or something.
Yeah, Okami.
Like, something like
very
that.
Very beautiful, but it strives to be that. Like, that it set out with that goal to have that.
Okay, I see what you're saying. I don't think that was the intention of Final Fantasy 7. I don't think it was either. It was definitely a limitation of their time and budget. I don't think they had enough time to make really nice-looking polygonal characters. As you can see in, like, their battle system, they have, like, really nice,
Yes, they look so much better once you get into a battle system. Like
anatomically correct people, right?
Everybody looks really well done. Yeah. They spend a lot of time on those sprites.
Mm-hmm. But in the world, it's like the Japanese chibi kind of.
Chibi.
Like,
a lot of people
super small
refer to them as Lego.
Oh, they do kind of look like
very
Lego
characters.
Yeah.
S characters. Very basic and very simple, blocky, big, thick polygon characters.
Yeah.
So.
Which, you know, hasn't aged great, but I one thing Final Fantasy VII does for the time, which was very innovative, was their pre-rendered backgrounds.
Yeah.
Versus the 3D
everywhere.
Characters.
Yeah.
So, like, the backgrounds still look really, really
look
good.
Really good. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think the game still looks really, really good. It looks old for sure, but it still looks good.
The game, it drips with atmosphere.
Yeah.
It has a very, very Blade Runner style to it. You can tell Blade Runner was probably a big influence on this game, I think. I've not ever confirmed that, but just being a fan of both those, you get a Blade Runner feeling from this game.
I can see that. As I mentioned earlier, it's very steampunk.
Very steampunk.
And it's actually one of the themes. All right, two of the big themes in Final Fantasy VII are of loss and self-identity.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's interesting that Final Fantasy VI did a little bit with the steampunk aesthetic, but like this game really is just like, this is Final Fantasy now. It's not this high fantasy stuff that used to be with, you know, dragons and warriors and knights. It's this weird future.
Even though it does have
hybrid.
Those things.
It still does.
It does have those.
But it's this new thing. That
it brings it into the modern era and even a little bit further into the future. Mm-hmm. Everything is based on a lot of the game at the beginning deals with the Mako reactors.
Yes.
Mako reactors are sucking the life force from the planet. Life force is actually, it's literally the healing things of the planet.
It's Gaia. It's what was, I think, Final Fantasy Spirits Within used the same kind of plot.
Very similar, and it came out not long after. But like basically when things die, mm-hmm. their life force returns to the center of the planet and replenishes and mm-hmm. comes back. So like a bunny dies and then attributes its life force to a tree. It's very almost sort of hippie-esque.
What is? It's it's the theme of loss. It's death and then rebirth.
Yeah, it's loss, but it's also life. Life is a big part of Final Fantasy VII. Each Final Fantasy has a theme that it follows, and life is the big one of VII. I know love is the big one of VIII. I don't know what the big one. I think IX is back to the crystals. Crystals play a big part.
I want to know about IX.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I would say more than life, rebirth.
Yeah, especially, I could see rebirth because it is a big part. Cloud's rebirthed. Sephiroth is rebirthed.
Or I guess moving on and accepting, because I don't know, you probably know this because you're a huge fan, but the game director Hironobu Sakaguchi, I guess notoriously or infamously, like, lost his mother during the development, and then this became about accepting loss and how you move on from it. And we'll get into spoilers later. We'll probably save that stuff for later. But there is a big moment where characters lose someone, and then the rest of the game kind of hinges upon them moving on from it.
Yeah.
And then that character does end up playing a big part in the end because they have moved on.
Well, and every character, to a degree, has that aspect in their story of accepting something and moving on.
Yeah.
I mean, that's part of Red 13's central thing, is that,
well,
you know...
I would, again, say lost.
Yeah, well, lost, it's lost and moving on.
Every character lost something.
Red 13, he's a dog that can talk, but he's the last of his species.
Nanaki,
whatever, however you pronounce it. But it has a very Native American vibe to it.
Yeah.
And so his is just dealing with that and moving on. He's always heard that his father is a weakling that ran away. And then once you complete his actual part of the story, you find out that his dad actually stopped and
sacrificed himself.
Yeah, sacrificed and fought till the end to save the rest of his people.
Yeah.
And so that's a big change in it. That's cool. Because then I like that scene when, you know, I'm really jumping around, and that's fine. Because, you know, Red 13, he starts to howl next to his father, and he also cries. And you see those tears falling. That's a really cool just little scene. I don't know.
I know, and I'd also say it's fine to jump around because the story jumps around.
It does.
It's a very complicated story. But speaking of like that, like everybody does that. Like Sid loses out, like he doesn't have the ability to go to space, and
that's
like
that
big regret of loss of that moment,
mm-hmm.
like is his driving arc. Barrett loses his friend, I guess, Diane, and then has to
I've always said it as Dine. It's D-Y-N-E.
Dine.
Yeah.
Okay. He loses a friend, Dine, and then has to kind of raise his daughter, Marlene.
He adopts Marlene.
Yeah. Tifa, what does she lose? Like her
she
best friend in Cloud. She loses
yeah.
her memory, kind of, right? Because doesn't she have like an issue
she keeps her
after
memory.
She
it's,
gets hurt by Sephiroth?
It's Cloud that has lost his memory.
It's Cloud that loses his memory. Yeah,
and,
you're right.
And Tifa is there to help him make himself whole. Because when you start off, Cloud he's shattered. He's really kind of broken off into different, and it's cool, like this game is very, very convoluted, but as a whole, like, you know, I really like how the first half of the game you play through that whole thing with Sephiroth one way, and then later on you revisit that from Tifa's point of view to help reconstruct Cloud, and it's completely different. Like there's this whole new character in it, Zack, who for the big part of the first half of the game, Cloud is basically Zack. He's playing the role of Zack. Like he's adopted that memory and that mindset. I thought that was really, really cool. It's a nice way to... It's very, we say this a lot, but it's almost sort of Tarantino-esque where it takes things and switches it around on you. So
Yeah, it's a complicated narrative in a medium that didn't have complicated narratives.
Yeah, nothing like that.
Yeah, and I maybe Final Fantasy VI did. I can't speak to that because I've not played it.
I've played it like
it
once.
It seemed more simple, though.
Yeah, it's very straightforward,
yeah,
I think.
So. As opposed to this, which you said is Tarantino. Like, it does play around with time, and it plays around with memories and how they can be skewed by different characters. And it's a very complicated narrative.
Yeah, which is you got to keep up with it.
It's not a bad thing. I think it's a positive.
Yeah.
It's convoluted, but I think it's worth delving into because I think there's thematic depth. As opposed to, like, Final Fantasy XIII, which is convoluted, but I don't think there's much depth going on.
Exactly. It's two sides of a different coin.
Yeah. I think that one's definitely more of the lines of I don't know. I can't think. It's just messy. Messy. Final Fantasy VII doesn't feel messy.
My one, I want to diverge here just a bit to maybe defend 13 again. Well, because, you know, the one complaint I always hear about Final Fantasy 13 is that, oh, it's a hallway simulator. Oh, you're only going exactly where the game wants you to do.
So is Final Fantasy 7.
Exactly. And so is Final Fantasy 8. At no point until you get the airship can you go where you want. You're going where the game is wanting you to go.
Which doesn't happen until, like, the second disc, right? Yeah. I don't think you meet up with Sid until the second disc.
Yeah, well, you get the airship, and then you actually lose it again.
And then it becomes, like, a boat. It, like, gets damaged.
Well, yeah, is it the Lucky Bronco, I believe?
I think it is the Lucky, or the Tiny Bronco? Tiny
Bronco. But, I mean, you do see the airship in this game is the Highwind.
The Lucky Bronco is my stage name.
Ooh. It's what he strips under, ladies.
It's when I strip, yeah.
The Lucky Bronco.
Ay, ay, ay. Magic Mike, more like Regrettable Ryan.
That's very witty.
Thank you. Thank you. I got my one in. The rest of this episode is going to be shit for me.
Self-deprecation.
Don't expect anything else.
But no, you get the high wind early, and then you lose the high wind again for a little bit, too. I think
that's true.
That's when Cloud goes into the coma. Is that when you lose the high wind?
Is it the coma after he falls into Gaia with Tifa?
Yeah, into the live stream, yeah.
I think that's in the second disc still.
Yeah, it's the end of the second disc.
Yeah, yeah.
That's around then.
So that's not super early.
And then once you get the high wind back, though, they do that cool change where it loses the propellers and becomes a fucking jet ship and moves faster.
Yeah.
I like that part.
It was always a blast running around in 3D in that ship.
It was so full, cool. Unrestrained usage of it, it's fucking great.
Yeah, which they didn't do that in Final Fantasy X, right? There was no ship. It was just
you pick a place to go,
right?
Because you're picking a place in the ship, but you don't
fly. You don't get to fly it around. Yeah. That's, I think, the big draw of it. Yeah. Like, I love that feeling of exploring the world.
I know, it's fucking great. You get it in 8 when you get the Ragnarok.
Yeah, I don't know about 9, but
yeah, you get
10,
you
didn't do
9.
It. 12, you didn't do it. 13, you don't. 13, I don't.
13
do you
handles
ship?
It the same as 10.
You pick a place to go.
Yeah, but you don't have an airship, you just travel via the Tesseract and
digital
memories.
And 13.2 is the same way. 13.2 is even worse. That timeline stuff is ridiculous.
I've played them all. I've played 13.3 as well.
I have not. It's sitting on my shelf brand new. I have no interest in it, but I picked it up for $10.
I pre-ordered it because it came with the Cloud outfit.
Makes sense.
I don't pre-order a lot, but you throw something Final Fantasy VII related in, I'm going to be there. So
okay.
Yeah. I
got nothing on that.
But yeah, bringing it back, you know, a lot of people say that, but 7 is you're not going anywhere that the game doesn't want you to go. It might show you walking on a giant world map,
but there's only one
location you can go.
For
on
the
that
whole
map.
First disc, it's very linear, and it's the same as Final Fantasy XIII.
I really like how this game has a lot of great, it has great pacing.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, the first half of the first disc all takes place in Midgar.
Yeah.
And then you get out of Midgar, and then what seems to be the world is fully opened up to you. Because you've never been on the world map up to that point. You've run around on these 3D rendered places, but I really like that. And then you get to one of my favorite places in the game, which is the Chocobo Farm. Now, here's the... Do you say...
Why is it your favorite?
I spent a lot of time there. I was a big Chocobo
guy. Oh, you... Yeah. Did you make the golden Chocobos?
Oh, every time.
Yeah.
Every time. Now, do you say it as Chocobo?
I think that's the correct way to say it, is
yeah,
Chocobo.
But as a kid, we always called him Kokobo.
I think I always said chocobo.
Yeah.
That just made sense to me, like chocolate, chocobo.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know why. I think it was one of those things I heard my friends say chocobo, so I always went with that. But I do say chocobo. Mm-hmm. I think that's the correct nomenclature.
Yeah.
That's also
there will be a lot of that in this one because there are so many names. Because there was no voice acting.
Yeah.
You had to read everything.
Just kind of go with it.
Yeah, and these made-up names, you're just like, okay, I'm going to guess that's this, but we'll see.
The Chocobo is also the first summon you get. Do you remember this?
Oh.
And I think the Chocobo summon is also the only one that has a variation that can happen. Did you know this?
No, I don't know about this variation at all.
So generally when you use Chocobo summon, you have the Chocobo and the Mog that runs in and runs through the people.
Yeah.
But very rarely you can get Fat Chocobo, which drops from the sky onto people.
Yeah, I think I've heard about this, but I never did it.
Yeah, it's very, very, I think it's like a 3% chance that it'll happen.
Ooh. Yeah,
maybe. No. And so you have to use Chocobo quite a lot to see it. But
okay. I don't think I use it that much.
So did you never Chocobo breed as a...
I did a little bit and I got bored of it really quickly.
So you never got Knights of the Round?
No.
Really?
No.
Because Chocobo breeding is the only way to get Knights of the Round unless you hack the game.
Knights of the Round is very easy in the late game to you. Or it makes the late game very easy if you don't grind up. There's a lot of... Yeah.
Knights of the Round makes the weapon fights incredibly easy.
I didn't do any of the weapon fights except the one that you have to in the story. Yeah,
which is Ultima Weapon.
Yeah, and then, that's right.
But you only have to fight him. If you fight him again, that's how you get Cloud's Ultimate Weapon.
Yeah.
Titled Ultima Weapon, which is a crystal sword, which color changes based on your HP.
Hmm. That's interesting.
Dude, I can go on and on. So Ruby Weapon. Ruby Weapon is underneath the gold saucer. He's the guy with the snake hands. Super secret, easy way to beat him is if you go into the fight with two of your characters already dead.
Yeah, which plays into the theme of loss, because the only way to beat him is to lose your characters, have them die, essentially, and then figure out how to move on without them.
Well, but see, you don't have to do that, because his big thing is that he can totally wipe character members off the map. So he will remove them from the game.
But so I guess they don't technically. Okay.
Well, but he will if you go with them alive. But if you have them dead before you go into the fight, then he starts with his snake hand things already in the ground and will never take them away. It's a nice little... And then you have Emerald Weapon, which is, I think, the first enemy in the Final Fantasy universe to have over 1,000,000 HP. I could be wrong on this, and hopefully somebody will call me out if I am. But I think I'm right that he's the first one with over 1,000,000 HP. But he's very easy to beat if you just have somebody with max Knights of the Round. And then you have two other characters with Mime. And then you just essentially constantly cast this on him. And, of course, you have to have the underwater materia, which removes the 20-minute time limit to fight him.
Now, I'm going to say something negative here.
Go ahead.
And I'm going to earn probably a lot of hate from people, because I'm pretty sure everybody who's listening to this is already a fan of Final Fantasy VII, probably loves it. This is the what you were just describing about, like, oh, this boss has 1,000,000 HP, and you have to do this. That technical stuff, I just does not interest me in these games in slightest bit. Like,
well, and here's the nice thing about Ruby.
Quest to get an ultimate weapon, do you have to do no, pass?
The
pass.
Nice thing about Ruby and Emerald Weapon is that they are so 100% optional.
You can beat
the total game without ever fighting them. And the things that they provide to you are nothing that at that point in the game you wouldn't already have.
It's a sense of accomplishment.
Exactly.
It's pretty much like, for people who don't know, they're like in bosses that are secret. Like, they're out of order. You don't have to beat them to do the story.
They're actually tougher than the final boss of the
game. Yeah, they're really, really hard. It's just like essentially like an extra challenge for people who wanted to do some more. Another challenge.
The Final Fantasy, I think, 7 started that trend. I could be wrong here. But I think they started that trend of the optional boss, because I know 8 had them. Mm-hmm. I think 9 had them.
Kingdom Hearts had them.
Yeah, Kingdom Hearts had a couple. But the bonuses you get from them, again, at that point, you've already gotten them anyway. Because from Ruby, you get another golden chocobo, which you've most likely already bred up your own to get Knights of the Round to fight him. And Emerald Weapon just gives you like a master magic summon command and attack materia, just one of each, which again you most likely already have at that point in the game. So yeah, materia, I really like the materia thing in this game. A lot of people don't.
I think it's fine.
Yeah,
I'll let you kind of lay it out before I get into it, but I'm kind of in the middle. I don't like it, but I don't hate it.
A lot of people don't like it because it takes away the class system, and I get that, but for me, I want to build a team of the characters I want, and Materia lets me do that, where I don't have to rely on having a white mage in the group or the black mage. Sure. It gives me more freedom to create the team because everybody can be everything.
Yeah, I think that's perfectly reasonable, and I think that's a good point, and I understand why you like that. For me, it whitewashes the characters, and it's just essentially their skins at that point. Like, why have a character if you're not going to assign them a specific type of class? Like, Cloud is going to be doing this for everybody, not just like Cloud can be, you know, a healer in my game, whereas you use Cloud in this way. It's like, I don't know. I kind of want the rigid structure being like, well, this is how they're going to level up. I like knowing, like in Final Fantasy X, Lulu's always going to be my black mage.
Yeah.
Yuna's always going to be my white mage.
But see, even in 10, you can buck that system.
A little bit. The spirit grid still has like kind of a path.
Yeah, it has a path, but you could totally send Yuna onto Lulu's section of the spirit grid and make her a black mage too.
After you spend so much into the white mage, though, exactly, like you're exactly, really like exactly. At that point. Like,
but again, yeah, I mean, it's splitting hairs, but you can totally do the same thing.
Yeah.
The differences that 10 has, that 7 also has in the characters is, well, you know, it's the first thing that 7 also introduced, which is the limit break. And the limit break is a separate meter that fills up as the character takes damage or also deals damage. And it's sort of an ultimate attack. Like
That's personalized for each character.
Exactly. Each character has their own. But it's sort of akin to the Spirit Bomb from Dragon Ball Z. Or, it's, you know, just...
Yeah,
in that way, it's the ultimate attack of that character.
It's like a fatality in Mortal Kombat.
Yeah, almost. You could say
it's
that
something
too.
Something for that one character that's very different from the other characters that gives them a little bit of character, a little bit of flourish.
Yeah, and that gives them their personalities, I think. So
yeah, I do too. I'll give you that. The limit break's a good way to do it. I just, if we're going with Materia, I just kind of like the structure. I get overwhelmed very easily with choices in games. I like to be told how to do it or what to do it, because the worst thing is like putting points into something and be like, I hope I didn't fuck up and waste those points and now my character is worthless. I like when it's a little bit more rigid. It's like, oh, so they want me to be a mage here. I'll be a mage. I'm fine with that. Like, take away my choices. Like, I like that.
I do to an extent, but there, I know that in 9, there's a point where you can actually screw yourself and encounter a game-breaking thing where you're supposed to take the two mages with you, but at no point does it ever explicitly state this to you, and if you don't do it and then you make a save in this area, you are absolutely and completely fucked. And that happened to me my very first time of playing through 9, and it's awful. Or maybe it's the fact that you're not supposed to take mages, and I had built my team around the white mage and the black mage. I think that's actually it. And once you get there, it's some island where magic has no effect, and they're basically... So I think that's actually what happened.
I think there's... I've never encountered it myself, but I think there's another like that in Final Fantasy VIII. There's a section where you can also screw yourself if you built your character a wrong way, and you do the save at just the wrong place, and then you're just fucked.
The number one trick for this is always, especially with these PlayStation 1 RPGs, is... have multiple saves.
I do this with every game.
Yeah, I have, you know, I know you haven't started yet, but I have 4 running on Parasite Eve right now. 4 different save files. I mean,
that's pretty intensive.
I mean, it is on my PlayStation 3, so it was a lot harder to do when you had one memory card back in the PlayStation 1
and
days.
You can only fill up 16 save slots or something.
Yeah, 15.
Yeah, something and really so, tiny.
And, you know, so you've got... That's very, you know, you've got a save file for everything, so it's harder to do back then.
This one memory card is just for Final Fantasy VII.
Yeah. And as a poor kid, you generally only have one memory card, or maybe two if you're lucky.
No, so. I only had one.
I had one of those multi-memory card things, which sucked because they always fucking...
Oh, with the little switch to change it. Know those.
But then they were shitty because they would always lose and delete your data.
Yeah.
And you're fucked. So.
Yeah. They also didn't look good. I think I know what you're talking about. Like, they were like transparent with like a cool color.
Yeah.
And like a little rubber grip to pull them out.
Yeah.
How fucking douchey is that little rubber grip for your memory card?
You get them for Christmas because your mom doesn't know.
They don't know any better. Yeah. It's like, here's your Mad Cat's memory card. It's like, God damn it, mom. Thank you. I love you.
Give me fucking Sony one.
PlayStation.
Like, come Sony. On. Yeah. Don't give me fucking knockoff. I don't want Mad Cats. But yeah.
Yep.
So you've got some notes here. I'm saying, let's run through some of your notes here. I want to delve into this.
Well, I've got so much shit, a bunch of stuff all over the place. My notes, much like Final Fantasy VII story, is just all over the place. Okay. It jumps around. So we already talked about originally this was planned for the Super Nintendo. In 1994, it started development.
Yep.
And then it got kind of put to the back burner. A lot of the elements were... originally, it was a detective story set in New York.
You can get that feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they didn't want to fully go with this, but they kept the detective stuff in. So, like, when you're hunting down Sephiroth and finding where he goes and, like, you learn the plot slowly, like, that was the detective stuff.
But
apparently, it was supposed to be more noir feeling.
Did that morph into Parasite Eve?
Morphed into Parasite Eve. Yeah, wow. They took that concept out. And apparently, one of the big bad sorceresses, maybe it was Genova, we don't know, was Adea from Final Fantasy VIII. So they took that whole character and put her in a later game.
Yeah.
But a lot of the stuff they scrapped because, like I said, Hironobu Sakaguchi's mother died. And I think that put the game kind of in development hell. And then they started to work on it again in the 64 era when they were planning on doing the 64 and the PlayStation. But Nintendo ditched the disc-based system. They had a huge fallout with Panasonic. And there's just no way that Final Fantasy VII could be on a cartridge. So
well,
then
and
they moved to
up
Sony.
To this point, Final Fantasies had been Nintendo exclusive.
It had, yeah.
So this was also a big shock to a lot of people that this was coming out on the new bad boy on the market, the Sony PlayStation.
Really, I think Final Fantasy VII not only put Sony on the map, like I don't think Sony would have been a force without Final Fantasy VII. And I also think it doomed Nintendo. Like I think from that point on, like we can pinpoint where Nintendo starts to lose it. And it's losing Final Fantasy VII.
After that point, pretty much all your big games on Nintendo consoles from that point are Nintendo games.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. That's it. Like Nintendo has a habit of doing what they want and trying to innovate in different directions instead of like following trends and industry standards.
Yeah, and where the market's
and
going.
And it's lost them all their third-party support.
But also, I guess Nintendo has a gigantic backlog of cash that apparently...
their toy days?
No, from like even just... They're very good with money in the sense that I guess I've read like they could not make anything for 75 years and the company would still be perfectly fine. Like
they
have
that.
A gigantic backlog of just cash.
I believe that.
So
well, good on them.
Let them play around because there are some cool things that happen. Please stop with motion control, Nintendo.
That's
I'm so over it, man.
Agreed.
God, I'm so over it. Agreed. I did not play Skyward Sword Zelda because I don't want to fucking stand up in my living room and play a game for 23 hours. I want to sit on my couch and drink some beer.
Yeah.
And at some point in my previous life, probably smoke a lot of pot. But not now. But still.
If there's ever an option to keep on motion controller or turn it off, I turn it off right away. I don't even try it out. It's just not going to be precise. It's going to be a hassle. It's going to be
never
going
to be one-to-one. Yeah.
No. So
until
it's just
you
not
get
worth
like,
it.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's just not worth it.
It's not. But back to 7 here.
Yeah, Final Fantasy 7. So some things I notice, and again, my notes are all over the place.
Yeah.
Kind of some of the influences here. Midgar and Nibelheim are two towns in Final Fantasy 7. And I think they are closely related to Norse mythology on purpose. Like Midgar would be Midgard, the center realm, the earth realm. And Nibelheim is close to Niflheim.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what that means thematically or why they chose to do it, but I think it's worth pointing out.
I know Nibelheim is, that was one of the first Mako reactors that was established.
Is that
the universe?
The bad town where Sephiroth?
That is Medeal. No, Medeal is where the whole thing goes to shit. Is Nibelheim, that's where Tifa...
I think so.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's the town where shit goes down with Sephiroth.
Here's a spoiler. I have the strategy guide from my junior high days with me. Let's peruse this. Wall Market. It's past Wall Market. Past the Pillar of Salt.
This is fascinating radio.
Keep them talking.
All right. So, Sephiroth. I have no idea why I said Sephiroth. That has nothing to do with the note I just
Nibelheim.
Read.
Sorry.
Nibelheim.
It is Nibelheim. You're correct. Yep.
So it is. And that's the scene. That is the scene.
And that's Cloud and Tifa's hometown.
Mm-hmm. This is the scene that everybody who loves video games and Final Fantasy knows about. The CG video where Sephiroth walks through the flames and thus, like, so many fan fictions and artwork were born, and now we're just assaulted with that shit.
And it also just, it starts to really cement the badassness of Sephiroth,
who is the villain but is also not the villain of this game.
It's weird. Again, you know,
this is where it gets complicated
weird.
Because you deal with cloning and memories of people who may or may not be there, and then it almost feels like a soap opera how closely everybody's related, because once Vincent comes into the story, you figure out Vincent was dating Lucrecia. Lucrecia didn't want to be with Vincent and chose Dr. Hojo. Dr. Hojo and Lucrecia had a baby, but they implanted Genova, which is the bad, bad thing that came down from the ancients, into her
alien
baby.
Yep.
And that baby became Sephiroth, but Sephiroth is really dead and has been dead for a long time. He's frozen in ice. And Sephiroth in this game is actually Genova shape-shifting into a form of Sephiroth. The fuck? And then Cloud could potentially be a clone of Sephiroth, but really, he's Cloud. He just lost his memory and is taking the memory of Zack, a soldier who served with him, who sacrificed. It's just so fucking complicated.
But Cloud was also injected with the Mako.
That's what it was. Mako energy, that's what it was, yeah.
Which turns him into a
which makes him
soldier.
Susceptible to Sephiroth's doing.
To a
I
bit,
guess.
Yeah. It's very weird.
Sephiroth slash Genova, because it's Genova, but it's just, oh man. So Sephiroth, I guess, gets set on the path of destroying the Earth because he finds out
that he is birthed from Genova.
He goes through the text about the ancients and how the ancients were wiped out by man, so he's gonna do the same thing back, right?
He loses his mind. Well, again, what he wants to do is become an all-powerful being, and he decides that he can do this by summoning meteor, having meteor hit the Earth, which will damage the Earth, and then when the Earth sends the life force out to repair itself, he will take the life force into
himself. Become a god.
Yes, basically.
Yes, okay. And so it's all very complicated, but if you listen to my, again, very rambly summation right there, you can easily hear, like, the themes of loss and self-identity. Like, Sephiroth feels the loss of his people, the ancients. That's what sets this all in motion, the loss of, like, all his... And, like, that's also self-identity kicking in. Like, he realizes what he is and what he has to do and all this stuff. Like,
because up to that point, he had been the top Shinra soldier.
Yeah.
And soldier is a... And they're just basically warriors. Mm-hmm. And Cloud is a very low-ranking member who goes with Sephiroth back to his hometown. And when Sephiroth loses his mind because he discovers the truth in the basement of the mansion.
The mansion where Hojo, Dr. Hojo, the scientist, has been doing experiments with
Genova. He started
out
there, and a lot of his records are there. And Sephiroth spends, like, days in the basement in the library reading about it.
Yeah, that's right. That's one of the things I really like about this game too, is for an RPG, it kind of plays around a lot. The first time you meet Sephiroth, you hear for, like, the first, I don't know, 8 hours, like, Sephiroth's this badass imposing figure, like, look at all this destruction he's causing and all this. And the first time you actually see him is, like, 8 hours into the game, where you do this flashback mission where he's with Cloud and Soldier, and, like, you get to play as Sephiroth.
And
Sephiroth.
He is absolutely badass.
Yeah.
He's
so,
one-shotting,
like, Cloud
dragons.
Does his hit, and it's, like, 23 damage. And then Sephiroth hits, it's, like, 99999 damage. It's something ridiculous.
Yeah.
So not only is, like, that's a cool way to tell the story. Like, now I'm going to finally see this character who's a bad guy, who's the villain of our story. I'm going to play as them. And then it's, like, it's really just smart gameplay dynamic that through the gameplay itself, you can see how powerful he is.
Yeah, exactly. It really establishes him as a character of supreme badassness.
It's great foreshadowing, and it sets up a kind of fantastic chase, because you're essentially just chasing Genova / Sephiroth for the rest of the game.
And as you chase him, you do encounter him periodically, and as you encounter Sephiroth, which it's actually a projection of Sephiroth, because he's in the North Cave this entire game.
He's frozen.
But he's projecting himself out into the world, and each time you encounter him, he drops a piece of Genova who is, again, that's the alien being from another planet that crashes into the world that this game takes place on. And when he drops a piece of it, you fight a Genova boss, which is really cool. My favorite one that you fight is right after the, spoilers alert, after your Aerith dies.
Oh, okay.
And it's only because the Aerith theme continues to play during that boss fight instead of the usual boss fight music.
Yeah, that's right.
It's a very cool, surreal little thing.
Yeah. I was wondering what you were going with that, because I was like, well, all the Genovas are kind of the same. They look like the same kind of white, goofy monster thing.
Until you get to the North
Cave. The final one. Yeah,
which is like, it's like a sphere with these two tentacles.
It's a big queen bee butt with Sephiroth's angel body on the front.
Well, no, that's different.
Or is that the later one?
That's Sephiroth.
I'm jumping around.
That's Angel Sephiroth and Safer Sephiroth. No,
I don't know the names.
Bizarro Sephiroth, which is that one you're talking about.
Okay.
With the weird wing. And then there's
before that.
Safer Sephiroth, which is the one with the six wings, which plays, in my opinion, the absolute best song in the entire world, which is the One Wing and Angel theme. Man, I think I'll send it to sound engineer Andrew. That song needs to be in this podcast, too.
All right, so let's play it here.
Yeah. Right there, just even that tiny sampling, it's such a fucking epic jam. And
again,
here's what makes these group of Final Fantasies, I think, the best, especially this one, I think is the best soundtrack outside of the next game we are going to discuss. But man, this soundtrack.
Nobuo Uematsu.
Uematsu, man, just fucking
such a great composer.
And this is right when MIDI was coming in, and this whole soundtrack is in MIDI. Again, you have it, and maybe I should have still done it because I did import this soundtrack a long time ago. And the fourth disc is full of nothing but orchestral variations of it. Do you have that? Okay, yeah. Because
I also have the Final Fantasy VII Advent Children,
which is a great one too.
Great,
I love the Sephiroth theme in that one because they get all kinds of metal guitar into it.
For those who fight, the piano version of the battle theme is brilliant.
I used to have a band called Stillmore Fighting, which is the name of the fight music in this game. Which,
nice.
Again, you know, I fucking love this game, man. I started out. When I first played this game, or when I first got exposed to it, I was in like seventh grade. And everybody I knew that had PlayStation had this game and they loved it. And I rented it because, you know, everybody's talking about it. I was like, I got to play this game. At that point, like, I'd only played Sega Genesis and Super Nintendo where you save on the cartridge. I'd never been exposed to this disc game. I didn't have a memory card when I played this game the first time. So I got to like the Scorpion fight like four or five times. Because I didn't know how to save. I didn't know what the fuck was going on. And I didn't like it.
I was going to say, like, that would turn me off to the game.
Yeah, and it did. And so I took it back. And then, like, people kept talking about it. And then I was telling people, I was like, I don't like it because I can't save. And they're like, well, you got to have a memory card. And I'm like, what's a memory card? And so then I got my mom to get me one. And I played it again. And then it hooked me. So that's really where my love affair started. And I got, you know, again, I have this guide. I have had this guide since I was in seventh grade.
Oh, man. It's all right. I'm going to just describe this guide.
Please do.
It is beat to shit.
Absolutely
there
beat to shit.
No cover.
No cover. No first or second pages.
Various brown stains on it.
Yeah.
I'm hoping it's coffee or chocolate.
Oh, it's soda pop.
Okay.
It's absolutely soda pop.
It's all, the pages are just
eaten
torn,
to hell.
Frilled.
You can't read the spine.
Yeah, it's gone. There's writing on it. I'm looking at writing on the spine inside.
I went through and I renamed all the characters what I named them. I guess I named Barrett Poo Dog at some point.
Oh my God.
Yeah, that's
wait,
pretty
let's
good.
Go. Let's see the rest of these characters.
All right, let's see if we can do
so
this.
So Barrett is Poo Dog.
Let's see. Did I rename Cloud? Where's Cloud at? Keep talking because this is going to be funny.
So
on each boss, I would go through and I would write down their HP from the bestiary in the back.
Now, why would you do that if it's in the back?
Because then I wouldn't have to turn to the back because I'm following
the guide
along.
Just turn to the
back
instead of writing and ruining the guide.
Who says
that resale value?
Yeah, the
is
resale
like,
value.
There's
on this
none.
Thing.
You're gonna have to pay somebody to take that now. It's so beat up.
All right, so Cloud was named Kyle.
Of course, I knew it. I knew it was gonna be something like me.
Eris is named Nev. Because at this point, I had a giant crush on Nev Campbell.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
And, I guess I didn't know that she died.
So you just figured out Aerith was like the girl from the get-go. Because some people would think maybe Tifa was going to be the girlfriend.
I still think Tifa is the girl. Because
I think
I'm
she's
pretty
the
sure,
one that lasts, obviously.
I'm pretty sure they bang before the third disc starts.
The one who lives last has the last laugh.
Barrett is Poo Dog.
Barrett's Poo Dog.
I love that name. I'm going to bring that back now.
Poo Dog. That's a good one.
I think
it's actually pretty good.
When we play through Saints Row the Third, I'll be Poo Dog. Where are the more characters? We got to get more into these.
This is weird that this thing doesn't have like all the characters in front like most RPGs.
Yeah, it's just got
skills and everything.
Character art sprinkled in
throughout. Well, I know the next one that comes up is Red 13.
Is it?
Is the next character.
I figured you would have been here already because we've already passed him.
Yeah, it's definitely before the Grand Canyon. That's not the Grand Canyon, whatever it's called.
Lost number. Damn, I wouldn't. Okay, Sid was Jordan.
That's weird. Do you have a friend?
Yeah, it was Jordan Riggle, I believe.
Oh, wow.
So
that's a good pull.
That's a good, thank you, memory. We're in Wutai. Barrett Poo Dog again. Yuffie is Tiffany. I don't remember Tiffany.
Tiffany was just the easy American way to say it instead of having to say Yuffie. What about Kate Shee?
Kate Seath was Jeremy. That was my best friend at the time, Jeremy. I don't know why I named him Kate Seath, who's the worst character in the game.
Was he chubby?
No, he's actually a super skinny kid.
That's really weird. Maybe he's the cat on top.
This is really funny. Oh, look at where Aerith dies. I've drawn two stick figures crying.
Well, while you look, I'll talk about Aerith dying. Because I think this is the thing that is most remembered about Final Fantasy VII and why people claim it as their best.
What is this?
It says Great Glacier. This place fucking sucks. That's true. This is the place where the map is broken.
With Alexander.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. But I think many people remember the Aerith scene. And
it's
then,
one
so,
of the most iconic scenes of this game.
I think that gives it a leg up on the others, which may or may not be fair. But I mean, for the time, no other video game did this. They wouldn't kill off a main character so early in the game because it's at the end of disc one.
Yep.
But that's still like, you still have a lot of the game left to go. So again, this kind of reinforces the Sakaguchi, the director's loss of a mother and kind of moving on past it. Like that is Aerith in this game. And it's just,
again, what I love
so
about
surprising.
That is that's that FMV. And once, once Sephiroth runs her through with that sword, the holy materia drops from her hair, and right when it hits that ground, it starts that first note of that Aerith theme, which is I think it's pretty iconic song in this game too. I've always liked that, and then it continues as it bounces in slow motion. It's hitting in time with the notes of the theme song.
Mm-hmm.
Man, it's very powerful. And then you fight, of course, Jenova.
Mm-hmm. And then later, the Holy comes back into play because isn't the Holy what essentially saves at the end? Like, Aerith is trying to
summon Holy.
She dies trying to summon the Holy to stop all this from even happening. And then at the very end of the game, when you do finally beat Jenova / Sephiroth, isn't it like the Holy Aerith kind of?
It's Lifestream.
Is it the Gaia?
It's Lifestream.
But
Gaia.
It's infused with her Holy though, right? Like, doesn't she have like a part of that?
I think Holy is lost at that point. Like, you get another version of Holy.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe I'm wrong that she's trying to summon Holy, because you do.
No,
get,
she's absolutely trying to do Holy.
Okay.
I think,
but
to prevent.
But yeah, then it. But I know it is the life stream that eventually decides it's going to save itself from Meteor and comes up. One of the things, you know, after you beat this game, if you sit through the end credits, it has a very Marvel movie-esque after credits scene, which for a long time was, I guess, misinterpreted.
Well, it's Red 13 and his kids.
Yeah, he's somehow bred and produced offspring.
He goes out onto a cliff ledge and then the planet is regrowing. Like, it's green now. It's not as brown and dirty as it was.
It's reclaimed Midgar.
Is it?
And a lot of people think that at that point what had happened was that in the planet, in an effort to save itself, has taken out the human life.
Oh, that there's no humans at all left?
Because it says 500 years later, and it's Red 13, and there's no humans. It's only Red 13 there. So, but that's wrong because Advent Children has said that that's not what happened. Because Advent Children takes place after Final Fantasy VII.
Okay. This is all right. So when I played Final Fantasy VII when I was much younger, I don't think I fully understood the story being
most
a dumb 12-year-old.
Yeah.
And then I saw Final Fantasy Advent Children, brushed it off, and I've not seen it since, so I don't even know how it plays into that. But
we should watch that.
I really don't want to, though.
Why, man?
Because I think it's a bad movie.
It's bad, but it's good.
I don't think there's a good part of it except for the music.
No, the fight scenes are pretty fucking tight.
No, the fight scenes are like Star Wars prequel Flash. Like, there's no weight or resonance to them.
Maybe
you
want
to talk about, like, floaty CG?
Yeah.
That's like the floatiest, CGiest bullshit fighting. And I know there's CG characters. I get it, but it just doesn't look cool. I don't know. I'm not an anime fan.
And that's a big thing. I am.
I'm not an anime
fan. But even so, like, I'm not a giant anime fan.
Yeah.
I'm casual at best. But what I like is a very finite subset of anime. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay. Yeah.
And it's very anime, those fights. I will give you that. But. I like that last fight with Cloud and Sephiroth. That's pretty cool. I like when Bahamut shows up.
I don't care about the Bahamut thing. And the whole teamwork is so fucking stupid.
Everybody goes together.
They're like lifting each other up by the hands, fucking 3,000 feet in the air. It's so stupid. And I'm sorry, but I'm going to be a hater. That Sephiroth fight, the only good thing is that the remixed One-Winged Angel.
Oh, I would almost guarantee that's 90% of the reason why I like that fight, but that shit's awesome. And they're fucking wailing on that. Man. I like that the Turks play a big part. I've always liked the Turks. The Turks are like a, let's say they're Secret Service in Final Fantasy VII. They're four characters, Reno, Rude, Elena.
Rufus?
And Rufus.
Yeah.
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 They're all just pretty cool. You fight them very through at different times through the story.
Again, they seem like that very I find Japanese games very esoteric. They are not for me. I know what they're trying to do, and what they do is very good, and it's very specific and niche, and it is just not what I look for. So you say like the Turks, and it's like, one, I don't know why they're part of the story. They're just another needless subplot. Like, what do they add? Like, they feel to me how David Cross felt in Eternal Sunshine to you. Like, I see them, I'm like, why are they there? What is their purpose? And then they're the very Japanesey businessman in a nice suit, a nice tuxedo, like cool guy, kind of cool guy, gangster, Yakuza.
Like Crazy 88 like, style.
Yeah, it's like, I see what you're doing.
They do have such a cool theme song, though, too.
I agree. Well, you'll never hear me bad-mouthing the music in this game.
At no point ever should anybody.
No, because it's fantastic music.
I think that maybe elevates it up, too. Man, I could listen. Again, I told you when we were communicating earlier, I actually imported this.
Which is very impressive.
Long time ago. It's a 4-disc soundtrack set.
Yeah. I thought about it, but I think at the time I was going to, it was like 70 or 80 bucks. And I was like, no, I don't need it that bad.
I forget how much I spent. I don't think it was that much. I think I got it for like 40 maybe on eBay. But it was brand new.
Yeah, okay.
And I still have it. It's in very mint condition.
That's pretty good.
Even though it's been very listened to. Yeah, man. This, you know, winding it down, I love this game, man. It's, again, I don't think I've played any game more than this game. The amount of times I have played through it. I can talk about it for a long time. It is very Japanese.
Which isn't a bad thing, because I'll say Metal Gear Solid's very Japanese, too, but I like those. I think this one is more niche. Well, Final Fantasy VII is more.
What I've liked about, you know, I think we've discussed this too. We're both big nerds.
Yes.
There's fantasy and there's science fiction. And I think both of us come down harder on the science fiction line.
Mm-hmm.
And I do like fantasy too.
Me too.
But I'm very, very more into sci-fi. And I think that's why 7 resonates with me so much, because it is so sci-fi. There's so much of that going on. Mm-hmm. Even though there's swords, there's all this crazy, weird technological shit happening too.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, I grew up with it at a time, you know, when you didn't get a new game every month.
Yeah.
All I had was Final Fantasy VII for a long time. So I played it a lot, and I tried to do everything. And I did do everything in this game. I don't have the memory card. I might actually still, where I have one of my perfect files where everybody's 99 and I have everything maxed. And yeah, I think I do actually have that memory card probably somewhere. If I really wanted to find it, I probably could. I don't know what use it has, but
I don't know. So winding down thoughts, I really like Final Fantasy VII, and I think for the time it came out, for the moment I played it, like, I loved it. As a kid, I absolutely loved it. I don't think it's aged super well, and
yeah.
It's not because of the graphics, because, in all honesty, I like PS1 era graphics better than, like, PlayStation 2 era graphics.
I give you,
like,
that a lot. I don't think either of us had a PS2 game
on our list. You had Shadows of the Colossus.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did.
And I'll have Psychonauts eventually, it's just that kind of art, whatever. The game hasn't aged well. I think the story is really good for the time. I think it's a little complicated.
Very, very much.
I think it could be streamlined, but at the same time, like, I kind of appreciate the mess it is. Like, no game's perfect, and then if there was a perfect game, it'd be boring. So, like, this is messy. The story's messy. The narrative's messy, but it's very ambitious, and it does something that I don't think another Final Fantasy game has done.
No. Yeah, I agree with you there. Absolutely.
As well. I think I like Final Fantasy X story hit the perfect kind of balance for me, where it's straightforward enough with some mystery and intrigue and some twists in it. I feel like Final Fantasy VII is just a smidge too convoluted. Just a smidge, where it kind of bothers me. But that said, it is still like 90% a fantastic, amazing game.
And there's a lot of depth to it. There's a lot of replayability to this game. I mean,
yeah.
you can go through and beat the main story and not see like 30% of what this game has to offer. Outside of
it.
I mean, there's chocobo breeding, there's revisiting the golden saucer.
Yeah.
This is
you can snowboard in this fucking game.
Yeah, you can snowboard.
In this RPG, you can snowboard and race chocobos and do all kinds of weird stuff that many RPGs wouldn't let you do.
For me, I wasn't very exposed to them before this one, but I think from what I can tell, this is one of the first ones where big impacts in the story change things in nearly every location. Like, things happen, like, people say different things. You can revisit locations, different things pop up. There's some cool things you can, like, there's some missable things, like the ultimate spell, which is called Ultima. It's totally missable if you fuck up the train ride section. I always thought that was kind of cool. The way to get everybody's ultimate limit break is, it's going to take some grinding.
Yeah, that's one of the things to that I don't think has aged well, that I think a lot of modern RPGs have really perfected, is the amount of grind to gameplay to story progression. I think Final Fantasy VII feels a little bit archaic, and that there is a lot of grinding.
Especially, like, once you get to the third disc, the only thing in the third disc is in-game or grinding. Grind.
Yeah.
And once you're there...
Yeah, I'd argue even before that, like, the amount of random encounters is so high, and it's a lot. It's a lot. And then you have to, oh my God, and this is another issue with the materia system, is you have to grind the materia, and then I'm not going to remember this off the top of my head, but the guy in the Grand Cosmo Canyon or whatever, like, he changes your materia to something, I don't remember what it's called, but, like, it's like another form, and then you have to grind it all over again, too.
Well, he gives you it's mastered.
That's what it was.
So if you have a master summon materia, once you master every individual summon in the game, he gives you the master summon, which is itself just a single materia, but has every summon in the game on it, which you can, again, master that. And then it's nice, because then you have one piece instead of, you know, seven different summon materials. Okay. You have one and you have them all. And again, I know I have a file where I have three different master summons, three different master magics. Again, dude,
that just blows my mind to think of all the time and effort that went into that.
That was a grind, my friend, I tell you. So yeah. I guess final thoughts. We're going to break a bit here on these final thoughts, because the final thoughts is recommended yes or no.
In all honesty, no, I wouldn't recommend Final Fantasy VII. If you've played it, go back and play it again. The nostalgia's there, but I think for a newcomer coming in, I don't think you're going to do yourself any service by playing the PlayStation 1 version.
So here is where the special circumstance comes in.
Mm-hmm.
Because at E3 2015... the world was shocked and rocked with the announcement of the remake of Final Fantasy VII.
Yep.
Being heralded by the director of the Kingdom Hearts series and Final Fantasy XV. I can't think of his name either, and it's okay because he'll never hear this podcast. But I like
But if you do, we want you on it.
Yes.
Call us.
I do like what that guy does. And from what I've seen, I was a little turned off at first because I didn't want them to change the battle system. But from what I've seen,
they
are changing it. And it's going to be very similar to the Final Fantasy XV and the Kingdom Hearts style, where it's more action oriented,
mm-hmm.
which is better for people in this day and age playing video games. It's not as passive.
Mm-hmm.
So on that, I recommend that, yes, you should play it, but you should wait for the remake to come out.
I would say wait for reviews on the remake. I am still kind of doubtful.
I'm totally, again, I'm going to pre-order the fuck out of it. Get whatever it has to offer me with a pre-order bonus. I don't care.
Yeah.
Do not pre-order anything. I highly am against pre-ordering, but I am pre-ordering Final Fantasy VII. I will tell you right now, I'm absolutely there. Day one, as soon as they open up. So
okay.
Fanboy to the core on this game.
I will not do that. That said, I hear the Steam version of Final Fantasy VII has a way where you can refill your health and you get speed. You walk really quick. You can skip the random encounters. I think that might be a good way to play it too, so you can get the story.
On the Steam version, I thought you were going to talk about the mod that you can add and
To make it look better too.
Yeah, which
I did that too. Yeah, then
it's cool. It's very well done.
Like I said, I like the old graphics because it's like I wouldn't go back to the original Star Wars and be like, I need better CG. Like, I kind of like the oldness. I like, it's kitschy, whatever, I like it. I have an issue with the gameplay.
My thing is
not aging so well.
As much as I've played the game, I've seen that style mm-hmm. so much. I like to change it up and show me the flash. Give me that pizzazz. So.
Yeah, well, that's not me. Because you gave me the Halo, and immediately I was like, back to old graphics. I'm going to play the Xbox Halo, not the 360 version.
Again, with that, I was the opposite, because I've played that Xbox one so many times. But anyways, so you say no.
I say no.
I say yes.
Well, I say no with the condition of, if you haven't done it, maybe like go on YouTube, watch. Because I think the story is really remarkable.
Watch a breakdown, or again, if you have not somehow played this game, wait for the remake.
I think the remake will be good.
I think it'll be more up your alley if you're
hopefully
into this. Yeah,
hopefully they don't cheeseball it up and make it like Advent Children.
I am very
this big ridiculous thing.
Standoffish or cautious. I want to say cautious,
but you're still going to buy it day one.
Oh yeah, of course.
I just don't understand that.
Well, that's fanboy bleeding through, dog. Are you not getting the Tim Schafer Psychonauts 2 day one?
It's gonna be good. Why would I have to worry about it when I absolutely love the first one, and then this thing's gonna be just as good? It's not like he showed me Raz and he's like super fucking cool with sunglasses and like a fucking attitude and like super dark and gritty shit. Like, I'm sorry, that 7 remastered looks like kind of hot garbage right now. Like,
it looks like Advent Children to me.
It does. I think Advent Children's hot garbage.
I like stylistically, I like the changes they made in Advent Children. I thought that was cool.
I don't.
Well, that's cool. Hey, okay. Man.
I mean, that's all I gotta say.
I can't differentiate how much of it is my fanboy just bleeding through. And it's probably a lot.
I'm happy. Talking to the guy who goes and sees like Ghost Rider opening night because, hey, Marvel.
Oh,
so
God.
I understand.
Oh, my God.
I just, 2 hours and $10 versus $60 and fucking 80 hours. Like, that's the difference. Yeah. That's a lot of time commitment.
I hope that Psychonauts 2 Raz is like,
oh my God.
He is wearing sunglasses and they call him Razzmatazz.
I will eat my shorts. I will eat my shorts on this podcast if they come out and he has fucking tude and like a makeover. I will eat my shorts.
Man, they call it ratitude in the 90s. You remember that?
Yes.
I think it was, what was it? It was like some fucking, was it Rocket Possum or some shit?
Is it Awesome Possum?
Awesome Possum.
Awesome Possum.
And they said he had ratitude. And then Bubsy had batitude.
Oh, Bubsy.
So bad. Jeez. So, I got, that's the windup.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you want to give out our contact information?
I can give out our contact information. Please do. Yeah, please find us at facebook.com/experiencegrind. Like us, subscribe to us there. We'll keep you updated with any posts. Try to get our community going. We love to talk to you, hear what you want to hear. Hey, if you have any episode suggestions, games, or movies to watch, let us know. You can also find us at twitter.com/expgrindpodcast. Over there, Kyle is doing an awesome job tweeting out pretty funny stuff on a regular basis. So please subscribe, watch them over there. You can also find our website, www.experiencegrind.com, our email at experiencegrindpodcast@gmail.com. And Kyle's also running a Twitch TV at twitch.tv/experiencegrind. So please find all our stuff.
Yeah, get
like
at
us.
We cannot respond. Give you more content if we wanted to. We are everywhere.
Oh, wait,
point.
But we are giving you more content because we are on YouTube too now.
We're on YouTube.
Didn't mean to set it up, but you did, because I forgot YouTube.
So you should, if you haven't followed us on Twitch, you really should, because I'm telling you, in the very near future, I bought Ryan a copy of Saints Row the Third.
Mm-hmm.
We are going to play through that entire game co-op together.
Probably naked the entire time.
I'm definitely going to be naked in that game. I'm always naked, and I'm wearing a pair of sexy women's boots. That's how I play the game. That's going to happen.
Yeah.
It's going to be good. I'm going to name that character Poo Dog.
I think Poo Dog's the only way to
you
go.
You have to refer
Mine's
to me gonna
be
as
Tiffany.
Poo Dog. Tiffany and Poo Dog.
Tiffany.
We're going to do
or
it.
Or Nev. I'll be Nev.
Okay, yeah, you be Nev.
For Nev Cameron. Yeah. Yeah.
Nev and Poo Dog. We're going to kill it. And it's going to be fun. We're going to broadcast it on Twitch, and we'll put it up on YouTube because we're going to get into some crazy antics. I think my goal will be to infuriate Ryan as much as possible playing. So maybe I shoot him a bunch. I don't know. We don't know. What's going to happen? Join us and find out.
It's called playing with the wife.
Yeah.
That's why playing with Laura is like.
Speaking of, your wife, Laura, will be a very special guest in one of our very upcoming episodes.
Yeah.
It's going to be fun. I look forward to talking to Laura. She's got a lot of great insight. Another thing I like about Laura is she doesn't bullshit.
She does not.
So I look forward to that. That's going to be fun. And I think we'll also have her do our new spoiler intro. That's been the thing we've been talking about. But she's a very busy woman, that wife of yours.
She does tend to keep herself pretty busy.
Yeah, I don't get it, man.
Which is fine. Leaves plenty of game time for me to grind through Final
Sorry,
Fantasy
honey,
VII.
I got to play this game. I don't know. What do you want me to do? I got fans. Anyways.
That's so much work.
Thank you guys, as always, for sticking around and listening. I think this is going to go on the record as the longest episode we've ever done.
Absolutely.
If you've listened to this point, let us know the secret code word, which is Barracuda. If you text either of us or contact us on Facebook or Twitter with the word Barracuda, we'll give you a vocal shout out on the next episode. Thank you guys as always. I'm Kyle.
I'm Ryan.
And together we are Experience Grind Podcast. Thank you guys.